Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review with Donovan and Ken. Episode number 447, recorded March 9th, 2025.
And we're continuing with the two ongoings today. So we got Star Trek issue number 29 and Defiant issue number 24. Leading up to the Lore War, but not quite there yet.
The Lore War. Yeah, we're not there. But at least we're starting to make some progress, I guess, on seeing exactly how Sisko and company are going to, or maybe mostly Sisko, are going to get the universe back. I don't know. At least we see a little bit more with this issue than the previous issue, but I still don't quite know how this is going to play out.
Right. And then the Defiant still taking place before the universe was erased. And we'll find out whether Alexander's going to have honor when the universe gets erased. Did he at least have honor first?
Exactly. Did he achieve his honor?
It's been keeping me up at night. So I'm glad we're getting a little closer to that storyline being finished.
Right. Of course, really. I mean, come on. You know, Worf's a big hero. You know, come on. You pretty much know it. Alexander's going to make it. Come on. Really. Anyway.
They've killed him off once.
Very temporarily. Okay. Well, shall we just get going?
Yeah, let's do it.
Excellent. I am doing the Star Trek 2022 series, issue 29, When the Walls Fell, part 5. February published date, 2025. Creative team, Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing. Artist, Tess Fowler, with some very interesting art style. Letterer, Clayton Cowles. Design and production, Neil Yataki. Group editor, Heather Antos. And editorial assistant, Cassandra Jones. Okay, we got our three covers. Cover A presents Sisko in robes over a red and black kind of uniform ensemble, sitting on a throne like chair thingy raised up on a dais, and there's candles lit on metal stands around him. There's an orb box to his left, and then there's a large yellow lit Bajoran symbol kind of built into the wall. Looks kind of cool. Art by Ramon Rosanas, and colors by Lee Lowridge. Cover B features the Sisko in flowing robes, hovering in the air with a Bajoran skyline behind him. To his left and right are what appear to be Bajoran heads that are of significance. The Bajoran people, they almost remind me of, I don't know, some kind of apostles. But there's only four of them. And this artwork is by Tess Fowler. The retailer incentive cover presents the Sisko in robes over his black and red uniform using a cane, standing in front of a huge orb box. A bright source of light is positioned above the box, and its shining light beams down on the scene. Art by Jake Bartok. The universe has ended, but the Sisko on New Bajor with her five moons in the sky continue on in some kind of pocket universe, protected from the machinations from the evil android Lore, who even now is destroying and remaking the people Sisko loves. Over the 1,000 years that have passed since his arrival, Sisko has learned much. He is now a builder and a leader, to the people of Bajor who have progressed from a Bronze Age civilization to one that can travel to her moons and eventually beyond that. Sisko says he is constructing the Celestial Temple, and in time, even a starship. Sisko is frustrated with the progress of his engineers. They are taking too long to figure out how to construct the technology he describes to them, but over time they do progress. A vision of Sisko's son, Jake, visits Sisko and asks him a riddle. What is a lock without a key? Sisko is frustrated. He can't lose to Lore, and he can't waste his time on visions of his family that are in his head. The vision of Jake says he does not exist anymore, never has. Just like all the others, just like Sisko even, wiped from existence. Sisko says the prophets survived. They are powerful and escaped Lore's destruction of all universes. With their power, Sisko says he will find a way to bring back what he has lost. Sisko is building the Celestial Temple. If his mother could save her son, then Sisko can save his son. Jake disappears and Sisko continues on through the Third Age of Bajor, trying to make progress on all of his plans. Sisko runs into problems, making his people do what they must do to bring his plans to fruition. He decides to implement the infamous Bajoran caste system to have the people of Bajor specialize and focus their efforts on one single ecclesiastical goal. Time goes on, and through the Bajoran people-focused faith, Sisko is able to construct the 10 orbs of the Prophet. Finally, the starship, also called the Celestial Chariot, is ready to fly to the wormhole. As Sisko enters the wormhole, he says he is no longer a Bajor, he is of the temple. Sisko finds himself off the bridge and in a stark white landscape with 9 figures in front of him. Sisko's mother appears and welcomes him to his rest. His path has been victorious. Angrily, Sisko says he passed the prophet's tests and made the temple, so now bring them back. The 9 human-shaped blobs coalesce into the gray spectral forms of the people closest to him. Jake, Cassidy, Worf, Dr. Crusher, Talir, Kira, and more. When they speak, it is obvious they are the prophets, taking the form Sisko can relate to. What they essentially say in their flawless, detached logic is there is no back, as in bringing back the people he loves. They crafted the Sisko, and he crafted the temple for the prophets. He can remain here with the prophets. Sisko asks his mother if she feels any pity for the people he left behind. She replies, "Why would we pity something that does not exist?" Sisko thinks about her answer and then gets real angry. "Wrong goddamned answer." Standing in the middle of the wormhole, Sisko, the builder, moves the wormhole to the last moments of the universe, where he hopes to find a man already touched by our tears. Sisko will give him the tools he will need to act where Sisko cannot go and save everything. Kalis will be my emissary. To be continued in Quavo Kalas. That was my attempt at a Klingon thing.
Hey, worked for me.
Okay.
You tricked me. I thought a Klingon showed up.
Cool.
So is that the real Kalis or Kalis the Second?
Okay, that's a good question. I assumed it was the real Kalis. I assumed it was Kalis the Second, the clone.
Right.
But if you look at him in this picture, he looks very idealized. He's got his batleth as his side. He's got an intact red robe, and he looks like he's got, Klingon armor, and he looks clean and ready to go. He doesn't, I don't see any gray in his hair or anything. And that's very different from what we're going to see in the Defiant issue.
Right, which also has Kalis the second in it. So
Yes, it does.
I'm assuming it's Kalis the first, but why would Sisko go to Kalis and not, well, I don't know, Jesus or some other
Well,
demigod
also,
from another
if
planet?
sure. And if it is the original Kalis, why does he go back in time? I mean, again, I think they've established that there is no, I don't know.
Yeah, there
It
should
seems
be.
like there should be no time. I mean, like the point we had different ideas about like what's really going on. Did they go back to the original Bajor, but in the past? Or is this a new Bajor? And it was like, and then they say very clearly, everything's gone, including the past. It's all gone. You can't go back into the past. And then what did they do at the end of this issue? They went back somewhere,
Right.
right? I mean,
I mean,
he
he
talked
said
about,
he's, yeah. Yeah, no, he said he's going to go back to before it was erased, but if it's erased, then there should no, there sh I mean, it's supposed to be erased throughout time, not just in
exactly.
the 24th
Everything is
century.
supposed to doesn't exist. Like nothing exists. Including the past. So how does he go back to there?
Right.
Confusing.
And they do at least, I mean, I think what our differences on what Bajor was, I mean, they do kind of explain that it is a pocket version of Bajor, so it's not the real Bajor per se, so he's not really affecting the timeline, but I
Yeah, he
guess he
didn't go
kind
back
of
in
still
time.
is.
What? Yeah, he. Well, he didn't go back in time. He's not affecting, quote, the timeline, but he's using this new Bajor to be able to build the celestial temple, and then the prophets can live in it. It's like, well, where were they when they
You're thinking
where
too
were they?
linear.
I know.
Yeah, no, it
Well,
makes no sense.
they created the pocket universe. They created this Bajor. They created people. So Bajorans, they created the Bajorans. So they created all that. So where were they while they were waiting for Sisko to make the Celestial Temple?
Right.
Yes, I am too linear in my thoughts.
Right. Yeah, the whole prophet thing, I never liked. That was always my least favorite part of Deep Space Nine, because I love Deep Space Nine, but anytime it was like just the prophet speak and all that stuff, I was just like, meh. Not a big fan. But to be honest, the last page we find out is Kalis that he's going to go talk to. But what I was thinking when I was reading it, and he's talking about, I'm going to go to somebody that's been, touched and is aware of creation and blah 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 blah. I was like, oh man, he's going to go talk to Benny, Benny the 1940s writer that somehow also has created the Star Trek universe.
Oh,
And I was
okay.
like, oh okay, boy, they're really going to go meta that. That Benny, the writer, is going to be the one that restarts the universe or whatever. And then I was really disappointed when I turned that page and it was Kalis. That I was like, you could have done Benny right there. 'Cause he's they've never mentioned him outside of those few episodes.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well,
You know what I'm talking about though, Benny, right?
Oh yeah. That was a great episode. The only thing is, I mean, does Sisko's not aware of Benny, is he? Or
I don't know. He's
I
a
don't
god
remember.
now. He's been alive for millions of years. He knows the beginning and he knows the end.
But okay. Oh, okay. So Benny was Sisko in like reset as a science fiction author in the 50s,
Yeah,
40s,
the 50s, 40s,
something like
somewhere
that.
around there, yeah.
And
The pulp
then,
era.
and right, so he was writing his science fiction thing. He was writing was about Deep Space Nine, and but in the end, when that whole thing was over, does Sisko know about him?
I don't know. I
I
think
don't
Benny's
think he
in
does.
the final episodes too, and he's like in an insane asylum or something, and he's writing out everything that's happening in the show on the walls and stuff. So I don't know. I mean, I don't remember how much cross knowledge was happening in those episodes. Plus, it's all like up to interpretation.
Yeah.
Which I'm not the biggest fan of. Anyway. I like to be told what is happening.
I like things more concrete. You know, more believable, more concrete, not so ethereal, so meta, so whatever word you want to use.
Right.
Anyway, so okay, so it's Kalis. And we're not sure what time period Kalis. Although he does kind of look like it could be the old days, but how does that help? I don't know. The first thing, when I first saw that it was Kalis, I immediately started thinking, wait a minute. Is this, what Kalis is this? I mean, is this Kalis before the Day of Blood? Is this what got him all whacked out? Is somehow the Day of Blood something that's going to help Sisko? And it's like, no, I don't think so. And then we'll see in the next the next issue of Defiant. Let's talk about. I'm going to stop myself now. We'll talk about this at the end of the next issue. Anyway, my big thing in the end is, how the heck is Kalis going to do anything? And exactly what stinking Kalis are we talking about? What time period? What's going on?
Right. Yeah. So. And again, I don't know why. Why would you pick Kalis and not, like, you know, what's his name? The Vulcan guy? Sarek.
Right. Sarak. Sarak. I mean, I know it's very close to the name of Spock's father, which always confused me.
Right.
But it's not quite the same spelling or pronunciation. No,
it's different.
But it's close. It's so close. It's so confusing. Sarek. Sarek. Whatever. Anyway, I know what you mean.
I know who you're talking about. Exactly. So yeah, I don't know. I was a little disappointed that it's Kalis is all. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, but it's a hell. I mean, if it is Kalis at the after the Day of Blood, then that's a hell of a redemption arc. After everything he did to end up being the key to saving the universe, that's a hell of a redemption arc.
Well, we'll see. I guess we'll have to wait till the next episode. See. Next issue.
Okay. Want to talk about the art?
The elephant in the room.
The elephant in the room.
Yeah, I don't understand why. I mean, I get like they went from the normal artist to Tess Fowler when he went to the new Bajor, right? So issue 27, she did like the last page to kind of show this is a different art style, different, you know, whatever.
Setting, then, different world, yeah. Different.
And then 28 had a very different art style than what we're used to. But it was still close. But man, this one, this is like nothing I've ever read before, really. I mean, it's just like, there's sometimes where it just looks like it's just pencil drawings, like of the town and stuff like that. And like when they're doing the big dinner, and it literally looks like just pencil drawings and maybe a little splash of color in the sky, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So what do you think? What do you think it means?
What does it mean, Basil? Well, I think they're trying to get across to you. This is a very different setting than you've ever seen before. And I agree. And they're doing it at least partially through the art style, which to me looks like pencil drawings and watercolors. And the realism of the drawings is not very high, but, and it's not, this is not my preference for the art style. I'm not crazy about it, but it's different. So mission accomplished that it's a very different look to it, because it's depicting something very atypical in a Star Trek comic book. And So it gets that point across. I'm not crazy about the art style, and it's a little pastel-y, and it's a little watercolor-y, and there are other examples that particularly are off-putting to me. And I mentioned it to you before we started recording. In particular, Talir pops up at the end of this book, who it's actually a prophet, but it's the image of Talir. And some of the people look okay, like Worf looks okay. I think Kira looks okay, but then jarring. Talir looks like a lady dressed up as a male Vulcan. And that just kind of, that just doesn't look right.
Yeah, and there's one shot where it's a close-up of him. Uh-huh. And to me, it looked like Ortega from Strange New Worlds. I mean, maybe it's the hairstyle and then the but the more feminine features. I was like, at first I was like, oh, is that Ortega? Oh, no, it's Talir.
That's a good point about Ortega. I didn't think about that, but yeah.
So maybe in this, maybe they're just trying to show that it's, you know, the two personalities, the male and the female mixed together, or it's just artistic choice that gave them those more feminine features than Talir normally has.
Right.
I don't know.
And he's pretty short too. So, I mean, he's shorter than Jake, and he's more around the height of Sisko's mother.
Right. Well, Jake's tall. He's a lot. Jake is a lot taller than Sisko.
That's fine. But I think every time we've seen Talir, he's on the tall side. I mean, he's not lurch tall, but you know, he's a tall guy. You know, probably 6 foot at least. Anyway, whatever. Yeah, but and the others. So Martok's there. Okay, so Martok looks fine. His left eye is messed up. Fine. Okay, so who's the Cardassian? Is that supposed to be Dekat?
I'm assuming it's Dekat.
Yeah, me too. But it's like, ew, Dekat.
Yeah, why would you be dreaming of him? Your worst enemy.
Exactly. Everybody else makes sense.
Do they?
Yeah.
I mean, why Crusher? I mean, I know that she's on his current ship, but I would think that he would have a closer bond with Dax or somebody like that to show.
Well, okay, good point about Dax. Long history there with the previous symbiote or the incarnations of the symbiote in different bodies. But no, he's really close to her now. I mean, they were cooking. You know, he was cooking the Last Supper, and she was there, and you don't know for sure, but you know there could have been something. They kind of hinted maybe, but didn't say. I think he's got a close relationship with her, and it's recent. But yeah, well, his wife's there, Cassidy. So good, yes. Kira, okay, all those years on Deep Space Nine, that makes sense. But it's like Kira or Dax, if you had to pick one, wouldn't it probably be Dax over Kira?
You would think, yeah.
Yeah, good point. Anyway. And then of everybody on the... Okay, so Crusher, I agree. I'm fine with Crusher. But why Talir? I mean, he isn't particularly close to Talir, I didn't think.
Yeah.
Why Talir?
Because it's his book. They need to have a little bit of screen time. Can't pay these actors for nothing. They got to show up at least a couple panels.
Yeah, I always always was interested in the decision they made in the TV show, DS9, where they said, okay, we have to represent the prophets. So what are they going to look like? Well, why don't we got these actors sitting here. We're already paying them, so let's just use the character or the actors that we got already and just make it up that, oh, we're so different from you that we're just going to take a form that you can relate to.
Right.
I thought that was funny.
So can I mention somebody that is missing
April is.
and it kind of shows off that Cisco's a bad dad? Where's his daughter?
Sorry, yes.
He never talks about her once in all his little like dreamings of Jake showing up and him lamenting about, oh, my son,
well,
he's dead.
Cassidy isn't
doing
much either.
He never talks about her dead. What do you mean? Well, she's at least there.
Yeah,
he's at least
yeah,
sad good. She's dead, but
well,
you never.
Okay, how much time? Okay, agreed, but I just want to point out how much time did he really spend with her?
With the daughter?
I mean, I think it's only like days or weeks, right?
Yeah. Just from the time he woke up before he went and stole the
right.
Theseus. Or...
Exactly.
Really
and there was
stole,
only so
but,
much. Well, but he only spent so much time on Deep Space Nine, right? Which is the only time.
Right. Yeah.
So
yep. That's true.
I don't know. I just devil's advocate.
So yeah, he becomes a religious tyrant and even says that religion is only there to keep the people down. I thought that was a little jaded.
Control the people. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Keep them focused on what has to happen. Well, that is a theory.
It
definitely
is.
Has served that function, but yeah, it is jaded.
Yeah, a little jaded. I did like that
Cisco,
when he's like,
"Was Cisco ever a religious guy?" He never seemed to be a religious guy.
No, he never really accepted the Bajor religion, but now we found out he, in this universe, he created it. So, I think at this point he's pretty religious because
he's using it to get
a whole
stuff
planet's
done.
Worth of yeah exactly
yeah
yeah. I don't really like the idea that he's been alive forever and all these generations have worshipped him as a deity and.
Well,
he's capturing
he
all their
deity?
Prayers to create the orbs or whatever. It's just oh my I it's just weird.
I'd call him more of a. I mean, he's more. I think deity is too strong. Demigod is about as far as I'd go because I don't think they do. They really think he's God.
A god.
Yeah,
I mean. Okay. They think they believe him that there's these gods in the temple, but he's the only god they've ever seen, and he's been there since right. the beginning of history. So I think you would think he's a god,
as opposed to just coming down every once in a while and making yourself seen by a very few number of people.
Right, right.
Yeah.
This guy lives in the middle of your city. You go and give him all your prayers every day to fill up these orbs. You're building
yeah.
your spaceship.
Well, isn't that okay? Isn't that interesting about how he's constructed the orbs?
Right.
So it's the faith of large numbers of people that is creating these orbs. So
over thousands of years.
Uh-huh. So the orb of creation. Okay, well, that's nice and positive. How about the orb of destruction? Okay. So all these prayers of people are creating the orb of destruction. I don't know. Are these all the original? So I assume that these are all the original ones that they mention at one point or another in the
yeah,
show.
I think so. Right.
Okay. Because there are, what, 10 of them?
Right.
And I, some of these, of course, I knew, but some of these I did not. So the Orb of Journeys, I wasn't sure about that one. The Orb of Horizon. Okay. I don't remember that one, but.
Right. And there was even a comic book in the series at the beginning where it, mm-hmm. it had all the orbs and some of them were still listed as unknown or whatever.
Right.
And I think you're right. Journeys. I don't remember that ever being there. Destination. I don't remember being one.
Uh-huh.
So maybe that's right. Those are some of the unknown ones from that
oh,
other issue.
Oh, that's right. That's right. But you know who'd know?
Cisco?
No. Who's the expert on the orbs?
Colin Kelly?
No, security guy from Lower Decks. You remember when they purposely brought what's it? The big guy. What's his name? Shax. That's it. One of the reasons they purposely brought Shax onto the Theseus is that he just happened to be a Bajoran expert on orbs and stuff.
Orbs, yeah. Anyway. Yeah, so maybe he filled them in.
That must be it.
Must be it.
Must be it.
So when the people are building this starship, the spaceship that looks like a Federation type ship, the first thing that popped in my head was, what does God need with a spaceship?
How true. Well, yes, that's an excellent point, especially considering what Sisko was able to do at the end of this issue.
What, just says move the whole wormhole? He had to get in there first.
Oh, my God. So you need to construct a spaceship to get to it, but once you're in it, you can fly it around like a TARDIS.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
I don't know. I was really disappointed in that ship. I thought it looked so silly. I was just like, oh my goodness, no.
Well, okay. So I kind of like how the nacelles kind of look like TOS, original Enterprise. You know, just round and got the
tube-like. You know,
exactly, very tube-like. But then the body of the thing, it looks. What does it look like?
Looks like a contemporary yacht or something.
Or it looked like a cruise ship or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at least the nod with the two nacelles. There you go.
Right.
Well, do you have to go warp speed, Sisko? Couldn't Impulse do it? No? Whatever. Because I would think that building an impulse drive ship is one thing, but actually having to go to the trouble of making warp nacelles and have that technology, which is very power consumption compared to the normal impulse engines, I think you're building a little more. I think you're overbuilding.
Maybe you got to create a warp bubble in order to get through the barrier.
Oh, that's it. That's got to be it right there. Like any of this stuff is real. Maybe. Okay, so I got a question. So they got a great page where they show the ship. So they get big reveal. You see the ship. You see the moons in the sky. Or is that? Are those?
Yeah they're, those are moons. They're moons. Yeah.
And then they show it up on these stilt things and having pipes into it. And then there's a big, long ramp.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on this big, long ramp into an open door, big cargo door in the side of the ship, there's a bunch of people there. And then the people are around what looks like very stationary, big, huge statues. So we had mentioned, was it the last issue or the issue before? I don't remember. Where there was that big, huge statue of Sisko and you had pointed out the warrior woman. There you go. Yeah. So that kind of looks like one of them on a big, huge, heavy-looking slab of stone and stuff. And then there are three more kind of things like that. Now, they aren't actually moving those things into the ship, are they?
Yeah.
And if they're not, okay, they are. Okay, so they must have the anti-grab stuff going or something.
Right.
They look very big and very heavy.
Yeah, if you look on the previous page, you can see them kind of progressing through the city.
Yeah.
And you can see that there's flying cars too, so they must have already had anti-grab. So yeah, they're moving them from the temples where they've collected, you know, thousands of years of prayers, and they're moving them into the ship.
Oh, wait a minute. Those big, huge things, they're not the orbs.
Well, each one is holding an orb, or I'm assuming the orb is incorporated into each one of these statues. So the way I read it was that these 10 statues have been all around Bajor and collecting all the prayers of the people for so long, and now they're moving them to the ship.
But when you actually see the ship getting close to the wormhole,
yeah, you can
which
see
I thought the wormhole was the Celestial Temple, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And he built the Celestial Temple. Whatever. Anyway, so as he's driving there, you see the orbs behind him.
Yeah.
So they're normal size. You know, they're like, well, maybe 2.5-3 feet tall boxes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all organized behind Sisko's head on the back wall of the bridge, I guess. And it's like, what's with the statues, though? I mean, if the orbs are normal size and can fit in the bridge, what do you need all this stuff?
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, good point about the previous page. I did not click that.
Mm.
I did not click that together. Okay.
So, final thing. Not a big fan of the artwork. Not a big fan of the story. But one of the things I did kind of like is that when the people are kind of losing their faith and that one guy's like questioning his diagrams and they're just like swirls and he's like, I'm not understanding how to make this. And he's like, I thought I was trying to tell you. But it really made me kind of think of, you know, the crazy guy that's on the corner in the city or whatever. That's always like, you know, the end is nigh and kind of crazy.
Oh, right.
Sisko was kind of coming across like that. He's like, you can't figure out these swirls? I thought you were more advanced. Guess I'll have to do it myself. You know, I just kind of made him look a little bit like a loon, which I thought was
exactly
good.
So based on, can't you figure out how to build a warp core based on this? Come on. Anyway. I wanted to also make a comment since we're talking about some of the artwork is on page 3, early in the book. There's a particular shot of Jake and I think the mother and stuff, or Cassidy and the child, like melty thing. And then there's like strings or something, or little thin ropes or something. And then on the bottom of the page, there's what looks like Lord Junior kind of tugging on things. And this looks like a teenage. I mean, quite frankly, the first thing I first saw that, I thought it was Q Junior. But then it's like, oh, look at the eyes. This is supposed to be Lore.
Yeah, it's supposed to be
Lore. But Lore looks like he's a teenager or maybe a 20-something at best, which I kind of wondered why. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, I wondered why a lot of those pages.
Yeah.
Like you turn the page and you're just like, why?
Oh, look at this panel. Why?
Which is funny because I've read other Tess Fowler stuff and I've always enjoyed her artwork. So, I mean, I know it's a choice, but I just don't, I don't get it.
Yeah. Hey, you feel the artistic pull, the gravity of an idea, and you go with it.
Right,
and
right.
This is what we got. Okay.
Anything else?
That's it. That's all I got to say.
All right. Well, we'll move on to Defiant. My synopsis is not incredibly long because it's a pretty quick and self-contained story. So let's just get into it. Issue number 24 came out February of 2025. This is No Old Warriors 3, written by Christopher Cantwell, artist by Angel Unzeta, colorist by Marissa Louise, letterer Clayton Cowles, design and production Neil Yutaki, group editor Heather Antos, editorial assist by Cassandra Jones. And in the back of the book, we see three different covers. The first one is by Angel Unzeta, and it shows Alexander holding his batleth and scraping it across the floor in a circular motion around him, creating like a little ring of fire. Cover B is by Morgan Beam, and this is a very cartoony look, but it has Alexander on the left side with just his face, holding up a batolith in front of the right side of his face, and then in the reflection of the batolith, we see what is probably Kalis. And then the retail incentive cover is by Takashi Okazaki, and this is part of their Samurai cover series, and it shows what kind of looks like a zombie version of Kalis holding up a batolith. Kalis is all black and white, and then the batolith is black and red. So, if you remember issue number 23, and I know you do, the Defiant was bracing for impact with its shields down and about to be attacked by a Cardassian warship. So sometime between that panel and this issue, that battle took place with no idea of the outcome. Because in this book, Miles and Ro are just on the planet in some swamps, and they mention offhand that Defiant is somewhere else cloaked. So I had no idea how we got there. And it seems that here in the swamp, there's some Cardassians people, some Section 31 people, and maybe some local inhabitants, all in a guerrilla-style war zone. And now Miles and Ro are in the middle of it. They talk to each other a little too loud, and they get caught by Cardassians. So that's the end of the Defiant story. The rest of the issue is all about Alexander. So on a planet within the Klingon Empire, we see Kalis is now a poor pauper living off the rats that he catches and the few credits that passerbys drop into his cup. He is seen as a local loon who thinks he is the resurrected Messiah. He is eventually greeted by Alexander and Worf. He begs them to kill him and just to get it all over with. Alexander explains that he's on a rite of vengeance, and Kalis is to die tonight. So Kalis just hangs his head and begs to be killed, but Alexander does not want to do it this way. Kalis then tries to goad the younger man into standing down, since he points out that Kalis beat him in a fight in the past. Alexander does not fall for it, but instead turns Kalis's pride against him and gets the older man back up on his feet and fighting. As they fight, Alexander remembers the other missions of the rite. He also recalls dying during the Day of Blood, and that as he was dying, he did not see Stovakor. He also recalls his father talking to him about compassion and redemption. Alexander bests the would-be god and says that he will let Kalis live after Kalis admits that he is afraid and not above other Klingons, which he does do. With that, the father and son turn to leave, with Kalis pleading not to be abandoned again. Once alone, he vows to himself to find a new path. Back on the shuttle and in orbit, Worf tells his son that his honor has now been restored. They seal this with a bloody handshake and a normal human-style hug. To be continued.
I never saw that coming.
Which part?
Well, that Alexander has his honor restored.
Oh, yeah. That was a big surprise.
I never saw that. Okay. And I'm glad he did it, not by killing Kalis, but by showing compassion, which is
I do
really
like
not
that.
Klingon.
Yeah, every time he mentions compassion, like he says that to Kalis, and he said it to Martok in the previous issue, and both of them are like, what's that? Just kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's Worf's human upbringing.
Right.
Anyway. So that's great. So we knew it was going to happen. We knew we had to get to it, but he had to go through these X number of trials. So great.
Right.
You're done. You're back in the club.
Now he's a full-blooded Klingon warrior again.
Yes, he is. So, how the mighty have fallen. So Kalis is trying to get a job, and he can't get a job. And he's reduced to eating rats that he's able to catch and cook. At least he's cooking them. And then at his lowest point, he is ready to sell his Batleth for just a day of gruel, day's worth of gruel. He is at the lowest possible point of any warrior, especially Kalis. And then that's when Worf and Alexander show up.
Right.
And I love the joke. It's a great joke.
Yeah. So the joke is that, because I didn't put it in the synopsis, but basically they say they don't want to trade him because that would waste the gruel because he needs to die.
Right. And then you will die here, Kalis, now. Alexander says that. And then Worf says, I believe it is a good day for it. and then I really think it was very good artistry. So as much as we may not have liked the previous book's artistry necessarily, the artwork in this issue was top notch. And right. there's a three panels of how Kalis is reacting to the joke and the fact that they're there and they're going to kill him. And then he ends up laughing. I think that was great.
Yeah, no, it's amazing because it's like shock and then acceptance.
Acceptance
and then,
of death.
Then he just and like,
oh, there was a joke. Oh, I like the joke. Anyway, I think that was excellent writing combined with excellent artistry.
Right. And I liked the fact that, you know, he goes to get that job and the people are like, well, what are your qualifications? And then he just starts rattling off Kalis, the first accomplishments of, you know, bringing together the Klingons and creating the first battle and blah, 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 blah. And then the guy's like, pass.
Denied. Next.
He literally is the crazy guy on the subway or whatever that says he's God or whatever. I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
It was funny, but it also doesn't make sense because, you know, how these books sometimes have the full page of just text or communications from somebody to somebody.
Right.
There is one where it's like, hey, everybody be on the lookout for Kalis because he's still missing and he's still wanted for all these treasonous things to the Klingon Empire. So I think that if somebody went and tried to get a job at the government and the guy told him that he's Kalis, you may, you know, look at him a little harder. Is this Kalis or is he a loony?
Yeah.
You know, I find it hard to believe he got away with it.
Yeah. Well, and wouldn't you think they would recognize him? I mean, how many? I mean, this is supposed to be Kalis's clone, right? So this guy's going to look just like the original Kalis.
Right.
And I don't know how good the artist work might have been before they made the clone. But then after you make the clone, then you really know what Kalis looks like.
Well, and he's been on TV.
People aren't
going to
see that image?
Yeah, well, and he's been on TV, right? He's been the emperor for a while now, right? The religious emperor. So it'd be like, you know, you would probably recognize the Pope if he suddenly showed up and asked you for a job.
Right.
Hey, wait, you kind of look like the Pope. So, and you're saying you're the Pope.
Yeah, wasn't Kalis kind of like the Queen of England or the King of England? You know, there were other people that ran the country, but he was like the king or whatever you want to call him. And and yeah, he's probably on the frickin' money.
Right. Good point.
So.
Yeah, no, I just thought that was weird. And then I also thought it was weird that, okay, so you have that whole page of everybody in the government's looking for Kalis and can't find him. And yet Worf and Alexander know exactly where he's at, go straight to him and to kill him.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, how did Worf know where he was and the rest of the Klingon Empire can't find him?
Yes. Don't think so much.
Oh, okay. So aside from that, and the stupid Defiant part of the story.
Oh.
Why end on a big cliffhanger of your ship's about to get rammed and you're going to get killed? To just, we're now on the planet with no explanation, and what? It's like we're missing an issue.
Well,
were you not thrown off?
Well, a little, but it's like okay. So they're coordinating these two comics, right? So they're probably on a whiteboard or something, or a virtual whiteboard or something, where they're planning out the issues. And they got to both come back together again, right? When the lore war thing starts. So they're figuring out, you know, how much story they have to tell. And it's got to fit into three more issues. So what gets cut and what doesn't get cut? And they probably just had to make the decision whether they wanted to not necessarily show yet another space battle. Or they just didn't have the time and it was more important to do these scenes.
Right. I mean, in the opening crawl, they just mention that Ro, Lauren and Miles are now on the ship or on the planet. And
I'm just like,
okay, that I'm supposed to just get it from the opening crawl. I mean, that seemed kind of weird.
Yeah. So they're on Dagobah and they're tramping through the muck and the swamp, and it's like, what's their mission? Did they say what their mission is?
No. And who's fighting who? You don't. I mean, they kind of mention, you know, like they're kind of hearing snippets of other people fighting, and they mentioned Section 31, which I thought was supposed to be a secret. And then there's the Cardassians, and then I think there's these. I don't know if these guys are Section 31 or.
Oh, they're Section 31. Yeah.
Okay, the ones with the visors.
So Captain Frears. Captain Frears is the Section 31 captain.
Okay.
They sent these guys with all the high-tech equipment and stuff and the weird phaser rifles.
Right.
They sent, basically the Section 30, the three Section 31 strike team guys with all the cybernetic crap on their heads and everything is supposed to kill everybody. The Cardassians, the Starfleet people, everybody.
I mean, and are there people on this planet? Because, I mean, if not, then what are they mining it for? Or what are they doing the mines around the planet for?
Exactly. So there's something on this planet that Section 31 does not want anybody to get wind of. And they're willing to kill Federation citizens. They're quite willing, apparently, to kill Cardassians. Although it seems like... Or is Section 31 in alignment with the Cardassians somehow? Because the Cardassians seem to not want them to remove the mines.
Right.
Anyway, I think there's something on this planet that is very sensitive, and they don't want anybody to know about it. I guess even the Cardassians. I don't know.
Right. Well, I personally would have rather a couple more pages of that storyline and maybe take away a few of the pages of... you know, Alexander going through his little montage of final battles and dying and blah, 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 blah. Just to me, this part of the story is more interesting, and they're like giving it no screen time and the weird time jumps so that you have to kind of fill in the middle with your own imagination.
Well,
I just, again, I want to be told
sometimes leaving it to people's imagination. Sometimes that's okay.
Sometimes.
But that does seem like a lot of things happen. So the bottom line is they're trying to bait you with this, right? So they're not telling you everything, not by a long shot. So this is the mystery box. So you already know, you know, the Alexander thing is going to be wrapped up by the end of this. And then you got the mystery of, well, what will Kalis clone do next? And then you've got this beginning thing with Roe and an O'Brien on the planet. So that's the bait to bring you back again. Because you're wondering what the heck is going on with the Defiant crew.
Right. Anyway. Right.
And, okay, so something I wanted to say in the previous one, but I stopped, is they've got Kalis perfectly set up for a huge redemption arc. For this version of Kalis to get the word of Sisko and save everything. I mean, it's teed up so well. I really can't see them going back in time with the original Kalis. Right. I think it's going to be this guy. But, of course, this guy looks absolutely nothing like what they showed at the end of the Star Trek 2020.
With that art style of that other issue, who's to know?
Not surprised. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, this does kind of end with him saying, I need to find a new path or whatever. And it would tee it up well to have him go off with Sisko, but.
And the fact that Alexander's decision not to kill him was so crucial. So if he would have killed him, then he couldn't save the universe. So lots of reasons for this to align into where they're going. But exactly how the heck Kalis is going to help Sisko bring back everything. Good God. What kind of mumbo jumbo are they going to use to explain that? Anyway.
Well, we're getting closer. Getting closer.
Yeah.
The lore war will start in just a month. 1 month from now, we'll at least have the first issue.
Oh, there you go. I would like to make a comment about the Dagobah scenes. So as they're walking along, O'Brien seems a bit like a little bit of a dim Dr. Watson or something. And then Roe is like, we're going this way and I'm going to talk as loud as I want. And I got to say, has Roe always had such a lovely, curvaceous rump? That's definitely the way the artist drew her in that one panel. But anyway, whatever. That's great that Roe is being so, you know, so leadership, gung-ho, whatever. But I don't know. I just don't get a warm and fuzzy feeling from O'Brien.
Yeah, well, last time we saw him, he took a blow to the face, so maybe he's just...
he's still reeling from that?
Since we don't know how much time has passed.
Yeah. So what did they find out that made it so necessary for O'Brien and Roe to go down? Because when they came to this area, I thought they were just going to blow up the...
mines.
The mines, or get rid of them? Mm-hmm. But... So is there a control? So the control thing for the mines is on the planet? Is that what they're going down for? I don't know.
No clue.
I don't know. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's it. I didn't like it.
I think that's all I have to say.
I wanted more of those pages. Go ahead. What?
I got one last thing to say, then I'm done, John. So the last page, they have the Elkars page of text.
Mm-hmm.
So they got the transmission going back and forth. Okay, so the USS Freeman, Captain Magdalena Wood, is doing a thing, and she's saying that Deep Space 3 is not responding. And they're seeing sensors are saying things they've never seen before. Blah, 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 blah. So... this seems like they're teeing up the destruction of the universe, right?
Right. Yep.
So we're finally catching up to where Sisko and company are, at least at the destruction. They got further to go, but at least the narrative is catching up. We're right. about yeah. to finally merge.
Right. And the last few issues have had these in the Elkars where they're talking about space. Space disappearing.
Yeah. Well, it's getting closer since they lost one of their deep space stations, I guess.
Right.
Anywho. So
and did you see the cover for next issue? The doctor's back. The Orion doctor.
Why?
Don't know. Yeah, so the next cover has the three ladies, the doctor, Ro and B'Elanna in very Charlie's Angels type poses, and then for whatever reason Miles is behind him.
Yeah, what's he doing with his hands? Is that like is he doing a dance?
I think he's about to do some martial arts.
Martial arts could be.
Yeah.
So he's Bosley? Is he Bosley?
Yep, there you go.
Okay.
It's a weird cover. But yeah, I wonder why the green doctor. I forgot her name now that they finally told us what her name is. I've forgotten what it was, but
She'll always be the Orion medic to me.
Right. X.
Or whatever I called her.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so she anyways, can't be alive.
You think it's just going to be a flashback?
Well, okay, hold on. So the last time we saw her, she was alive, but she was in the dimension of the,
bugs.
You know, the creatures, the bug, right. The bug dimension. And well, she had, exactly, they had that trilithium whatever bomb thingy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how could she be? Anyway, whatever.
Who knows? Maybe it's a hologram.
Maybe this was a leftover drawing. No, but then why would Miles be there?
I've wondered that too. Oh yeah, good point. Yeah, yeah. He wasn't there then. Yeah, who knows? Maybe they just airbrushed Spock out and put O'Brien. And you're like, hey, we could reuse this one. Anyways, it's a good tease because I'd be curious to see how they bring her back or in what capacity she comes back.
Yeah, yeah. I liked her. But, you know, stop bringing people back that you killed off.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's fine, especially supporting characters. I mean, you bring back Sisko or you bring back, well, I guess Alexander, although whatever. But she's a new character that basically was brought in the end to die. So just leave her dead and let's move on.
Harsh.
Sorry. I am very harsh. I'm a bit harsh.
Anything else for this issue?
I just want to say that that third cover, the retailer incentive cover with the Martok, zombie Martok, or no. Mm-hmm. But doesn't he have the forehead of Kalis? Yeah, the samurai one. Anyway,
yeah, no,
I thought it was really
it's not Martok. But yeah, he has the messed up eye, which makes him look like a zombie.
Well, it makes him look a little like Martok, but he's definitely got the scoops in his forehead that is definitely Kalis.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, I think I think it's a cool looking cover. I like
it. Yeah, in the back they have they're showing off all the, they're calling them samurai covers, so it's kind of cool to see them all together.
Yeah.
Over the last few months.
Right. Okay. That's it.
That's it.
What are we doing next time?
Well, next week we got Lower Decks issue number 3 and 4.
Ah, back to Lower Decks. Let's see what kind of light, funny folderol is going on over there.
Exactly. Go ahead.
I am saying that one cover where Tindy and Rutherford look evil. Hmm.
I haven't really
seen what happens with that.
Covers.
Well, so issue number 4.
Okay.
They have it at the back of this Defiant issue.
Right.
But they look evil. They look evil. So we haven't seen them look evil before, I don't think.
Nope.
So that should be interesting.
Those golden eyeballs. Not really gold.
Yeah.
They look like, what's her face? Like Mitchell. Maybe they're going to the edge of the universe.
Maybe. Oh, could be. Could be. Cool. Okay. Looking forward to that next week, buddy.
And then we'll be all caught up, so we'll have to maybe figure out something to do for a week or two before these ongoings can catch up with us.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, everybody, that joined us on the review.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes or friend us on Facebook at first name ST Comic, second name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Let's get the hell out of here.